Welcome back to After Action, True Stories of the Diplomatic Security Service. I'm your host, Damaris Garcia. What comes to mind when you think about the Cold War? Spies, clandestine meetings, planted bugs. With us today, we have someone that can tell us what it's like securing embassies at Moscow during this time. Retired security engineering officer Larry Doggett served at a number of U.S. diplomatic posts worldwide, but most notably, our U.S. embassy in Moscow. He was there when the Soviets planted bugs and when one of our own spied for the enemy. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Damaris. Thank you for having me.
So when you joined Diplomatic Security Service in 1985, you were supposed to go to Frankfurt.
That's right.
Something happened. You were diverted to Moscow.
That's right. My very first day, 25 October 1985, I remember it vividly. I walked into the office and I met Don Hoover. He welcomed me aboard, told me about what the SEO job was like, security engineering office job. After that, he pointed me towards the administration for check-in. So, okay, I'm on my way out when John Admire and Ken Crozier kind of intercept me, and they asked me, are you interested in going to Moscow? And I said, well, Hoover told me that I had a Frankfurt assignment. And he said, well, no, this is don't worry, this is just a three-month TDY. It won't affect your posting. So, you know, I was interested. A few days later, it was real. I was going to be going to Moscow for 3 months, January, February, March of 86. It was going to be an interagency group. And before we went, we had a little bit of training. We went and got some training on this specialized equipment, and they also issued us climbing gear. So after we learned about the equipment, we went down to the Potomac River, the rocky area there, and we did some rappelling and ascending on the ropes.
So you know what I'm going to ask here, Larry. Okay, rappelling, specialized equipment. What were you told you were going to be doing in Moscow?
There was an off chance that we'd have to go down the elevator shaft, and we needed to be prepared to look for bugs in the elevator shaft. I'd like to give you some background about the Moscow situation. In 72, Nixon and Brezhnev had an agreement. Both sides needed new embassies. The Russians, the Soviets, gave us a six-acre plot near where the existing embassy was, and we gave the Russians a nice plot on Wisconsin Avenue, where it crests.
So we started construction in 1972 in Moscow of this building.
Actually, no, we didn't start until 79.
1979, we start construction of this building in Moscow, of our new embassy. 7 years later, you are tasked with going into the embassy with these special skills that you've learned to find these bugs.
Right.
Why did it take that long?
I don't know why. They had some weak security profile for sure. And one of the CBs discovered something. I believe it was a hollow rebar.
And to clarify, the U.S. Navy Seabees are a part of our security engineering corps that works with security engineers, security technicians, and they're part of the team and they work with us when it comes to technical security. So we had Seabees on the ground at the time.
The ratio of Seabees to Russian workers was pretty pitiful at that time. So anyway, we totally halted construction of the knob in 84.
And then the suspicion was not that there were the traditional bugs that we know of, you know, little devices that are stuck in the walls, but this went beyond that.
It was. I'll talk to that later. But there was so much concern that we had to stop construction and send the ECHO team in to assess the magnitude of the problem.
What's an ECHO team?
That's the name we called ourselves, the Interagency Bug Patrol.
So you get to Moscow. This is your first stint in the State Department.
True.
It's middle of the Cold War. What was it like?
It's apropos that it was also very cold weather. And I found Moscow a pretty gloomy place. On top of that, the regime was really restrictive. Soviets avoided talking to us because that would mean that they would have to be interviewed by the militia, so the milli man, we called them. There was nothing to buy except at the Beryozki, which is a store that's only for diplomats. And we also found a Russian military store, and the real popular thing to buy is belt buckles with a hammer and sickle on them. Another thing about being posted in Moscow in those days is that fraternization was very, very, very strictly forbidden. No fraternization whatsoever, basically. Which brings me to my encounter with Sergeant Lone Tree.
Who was he?
He was a Marine Sergeant Guard, one of several Marines that were posted at the existing embassy in Moscow. And there was lots of posts that they stood, and one of them was access to the knob. Every day we went to work, we passed a Marine who let us in. Lone Tree sat on that post a number of times, and I was able to chat with him one time. He was kind of an interesting guy. He had an interesting Native American background. His mom was Cherokee, and his dad was some other tribe, I forget which. And I had no idea that he had a girlfriend at that time. I understand that Lone Tree even gave her a tour, her and her uncle.
What kind of information do we know that Lone Tree was providing to this girlfriend, I presume Soviet girlfriend?
I learned later that he gave floor plans, and he even revealed the identities of certain undercover agents, intel agents, for Moscow and Vienna.
Okay, so he provided construction floor plans of our embassies, which probably showed sensitive information.
Locations of people's different offices and such. And worse still, he identified some undercover intel agents, both Vienna and Moscow. After Moscow, his next post was Vienna.
And how was he discovered then?
He turned himself to the RSO. He confessed. I read that he got blackmailed by the Soviets, and he figured, you know, that enough is enough. He really had a terrible guilt feeling and turned himself into the RSO in Vienna. In 1991, I found out, and the next day, there was a big fire in the EOB Moscow.
In the old building.
Yeah.
So you were assigned to Moscow in the 1990s. How did that differ from when you were there in the 1980s?
We did countermeasures inspections all the time, and we also did a lot of physical security work, like alarms, cameras, vehicle barriers, and things like that. Because of the fire, we had built in the neck, underground, a huge, we called it a submarine. It was a metal structure about 50 foot long with forced entry ballistic entry doors. Basically, it was the replacement for what we lost on the fire in terms of classified access area. And also, there was a bowling alley that was also converted into office space. So my job was the same down there in the new embassy compound as it was up in the EOB. We did two locations. Around that time, it became clear that the knob was just totally riddled with bugs. And not only that, they were into the structural members of the building. And there was no way we could debug that building. Around that time, the decision was made to go with actually 94, they finally made the decision to go with Top Hat Project, which meant to basically deconstruct the top three floors of the building. And with cleared Americans only, they reconstructed three floors plus a penthouse to the modified knob.
So we tore down part of the embassy.
Yeah, we actually tore down the top three floors. It took a long time. I think it was around the year 2000 when they actually moved into it. There was a huge shift in how we build embassies after that. Our DS construction security plan was born out of the Moscow fiasco. Now when we build an embassy, there's very strict rules about how building materials are purchased, how they're shipped, who can install them, where they can install them. And I know that because I spent a lot of time working in OBO towards the end of my career.
That's the Overseas Building Office, which executes the construction of our overseas facilities, right, for State Department.
The OBO worked hand-in-hand with the DS on constructing these embassies.
It sounded like Moscow was the beginning of a brand new program that grew out of the State Department with overseas building operations, as well as with diplomatic security, about a new way of doing things, a new way of securing our embassies before they're completed.
Yeah, there's another thing going on, too. There was a terrorism made its way into importance to embassy building. So we had these standoff requirements, which required building new embassies all around the world to protect our State Department employees.
What were some of the other places that you were posted to overseas?
I was posted in New Delhi for 4 years. We traveled all over that area. My region included Pakistan and Kathmandu and Bangladesh. Towards the end, I even had posts in Persian Gulf, around the Persian Gulf.
So you mentioned bubble room. What's a bubble room?
Well, that's the street version of treated conference rooms. The first ones were made out of plastic material, semi-transparent, with a soundproof door. And in the parent room, they had these white noise makers so that people can talk. And if the parent room was bugged, they wouldn't be able to understand what was being said. Unless you were like some people, you had a too loud voice, or very loud voice, you couldn't hear anything that was going on in that. That was called the individual acoustic conference room. And then we gravitated to the modular treated conference room. And that could be RF, radio frequency, and or acoustic. But it was more efficient, much better than the ACR was.
It sounds like you've had such an interesting engineering career with State Department. What was your favorite part of it?
My favorite part of it is that before I joined, I was stuck in an endless construction quality assurance job on the metro. And it was kind of a midlife crisis. And I always wanted to be in the State Department. My father was in the state with the Foreign Service. I knew I liked the Foreign Service life. I looked in the classifieds, and there was my niche. A security engineer. I could go join the State Department as an engineer and serve my country at the same time. And I was proud to be able to apply my engineering skills into the protection of our country and our interests overseas. And the other thing about the job is it's a diverse array of disciplines: ultrasonic, CCTV, hydraulics, passive infrared.
Construction, right?
Yeah,
mechanical
construction.
Engineering.
Yeah.
Electrical, civil.
So it was, even as an engineer, it was interesting, diverse, I will say. And that's what I really liked about my career.
Well, thank you, Larry. Listening to your stories has been very interesting, and we thank you again for your time, and thank you for being on the show.
Pleasure was mine. Thank you.